Okay, the switch has been flipped. The phone lines are open and ready for you, and we'll be back in a moment with our guest, Nick Begich, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Nick Begich, our guest. Nick, a few weeks ago, I had a guest on who, he claims that aliens are trying to communicate with people in a bad way. And he has invented, and he's darn serious about it, and he's got the, you know, credentials up and down his arm, that he's invented some kind of hat device to cloak people from, and shield people from these signals. Would that work in this case?
I don't know enough about the technology he's developed to really answer that fairly. You know, the thing about it is, I would say this is, if the transmissions are on similar systems, you know, whether they're using radio signals or microwaves or something like this, and it's designed for that, to mitigate that, certainly. But, you know, I have no idea of what particular signals he was trying to block, or how they might be generated, or anything about that. So I couldn't really say. But that kind of idea has been kicked around, you know, by people a lot. You know, is there something that we can individually do? And unfortunately, because of the diversity in which technology can be applied, the answer is probably not. There's not an individual technique, if you will, that will work. One thing that's kind of interesting, though, is when you look at the older materials, the older literature on this subject, they said that on the mass systems, the systems that would affect like large geographic areas, that they would only affect 70 or 80% of the population. Well, that sort of begs the question, well, how come it didn't affect the other 20 or 30%? And there's several possibilities. One is near fields, things that are close to you that actually have a stronger signal that your body will tend to lock onto. And your body will lock onto the strongest signal in its vicinity and kind of ignore much of the other, like you ignore background noise in a crowded room. So strong signals in your proximity that are beneficial signals might, and I say might loudly, might solve some of the problem. The other thing that might be useful, along that same line, is the idea that maybe strong systems, in other words, individuals who are healthy and strong individually, aren't as susceptible to external fields because their own signal strength, their own resonant frequency is high enough to mitigate external fields that are small or slight. That's a possibility, and again, a possibility. Developing a technology or a device that will counter every signal that can be carried in, I don't think such a device could be created economically for the average person to ever be able to touch. The real issue is, what do we do the same question could be asked is, what do I do to avoid personally a chemical or biological attack? And some people have done that. They got out and bought a gas mask. But the vast majority of people go, well, wait a minute. Certain things, there's nothing I can do about it. It's really the broader society. It's a mission of the whole population to do something about it. In this case, regulate. And as we have chemical weapons, as we have biological weapons, we need to regulate these in a way that makes sure that they serve our interest and amplify our values and don't discount them.
Jim writes from California, he might be right here. The practice, he says, even like we do when we mention sponsorship phone numbers and things several times, he says that's subliminal by itself, isn't it?
Well, I mean, everything is, there's two differences. One is persuasive and one is manipulative. And, you know, when you look at communication generally, there's a book, it's not been published in a number of years, called Man the Manipulator, that in it, what it does is compare persuasion versus manipulation. And the distinction they draw is persuasion comes from delivering a lot of information or hopefully all of the information relevant to making a good decision, so that you can be, you know, able to make that decision. Manipulation is providing only the information necessary to create the outcome you personally desire, and forget about the truth or forget about full disclosure. And so much of communication, I mean, if you really think about each communication event, whether it's on this radio broadcast or an interpersonal conversation, isn't it always about that? I mean, isn't it about persuasion?
Sure.
Or manipulation? And isn't it about how much information do you give in a good lively debate? The idea is to get all the information out. You know, freedom of the press wasn't so much in the beginning about saying whatever you wanted. It was about stimulating the public debate so good public policy could be developed by the average person, so that we would have the kind of discussion that we're having, you know, from the one-page newspapers of the 1700s to talk radio in the 21st century. This is the medium for democracy in the country today, is the idea that we can have this kind of discussion, this kind of dialogue, open up the ideas, and then point out the references and let people go find out for themselves and bring back more information on the next round. So maybe I learned something, and I do all the time, I can assure you, from listeners who send me things all the time. And, you know, this is what democracy is really about fundamentally. It's about communicating ideas, having lively discussion, and making sure at the end of the day, as much information as we can find is out there so the best decision that serves all of our interests can be made.
To the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Josh calling from Syracuse, New York.
Sure, Josh. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk to your guest about the connection between people with schizophrenia and mind control.
He's there listening for you. Go ahead.
I'd like to know the connection between people with schizophrenia and whether or not there's propaganda between the government and mind control.
All right.
Okay, you're asking about schizophrenia. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, schizophrenia is a disorder. There are some lots of chemical treatments, of course, that we've heard about over the years that really dampen some things and get some things in control. The question that comes up often is, you know, the very same symptoms that are experienced by some schizophrenics are the same kinds of symptoms that would be demonstrated by people influenced by these kinds of technologies. So the question, you know, often becomes is, you know, am I a target or am I really experiencing, you know, some other problems? You know, when you look at schizophrenia, there's a paper, and this paper was put together by Anu Mikaela in Finland, who did a study on acupuncture applications for schizophrenics, and actually found an application where certain acupuncture points could be stimulated that would rebalance the chemicals in the body in a similar way to way, you know, these artificial chemicals do, but create a situation where schizophrenia was relatively neutralized in some clients. Now, when I look at the government's interest in schizophrenia, I mean, to solve the problem, and it is a big problem, we get mail from folks all the time that experience these kinds of phenomena and have been diagnosed schizophrenic. I think personally that many of them are schizophrenic. Others I have doubts about. I think there's maybe other things going on. But we're not in a position to sort it out. We just don't have the resources or the equipment. And because of the variety of ways in which things can be created synthetically, there's no way for me to sort that out, nor do I consider that my primary mission right now. I mean, I believe that the first step in solving this problem of mind control is making people aware of what is possible and what is necessary in order to regulate those possibilities.
Well, can it be stopped rather than regulated?
I don't think you're going to stop it, because I think there's too many governments involved today in developing these technologies. And our government is not going to sit back and say, all right, we're not going to develop the technologies. Where I think our government should spend more of its time is developing countermeasures and making those more readily available to the public. And that's a fair way to develop in this direction if we're going to develop in it at all. I don't believe we should be developing offensive weapon systems in the mind control regime. I think it's fundamentally wrong. I think there's other ways to achieve victories in battles that are justified. Mind control technologies are not the answer, and they violate every human principle that I believe this country and other free countries stand for, which is the idea to think freely.
Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name's Sarah D'Souza, and we've been experiencing hate crimes in the form of electronic harassment since 9/11. And I had a couple questions for Mr. Begich. It's kind of a three-pronged question. We've been kind of collecting evidence and observing what's been going on, our health symptoms, and we're not sure if we've deduced everything, but there were a couple things we did. We put up corrugated sheeting around our house, and it seemed to alleviate our health symptoms and corrugated metal sheeting and reduce the high temperatures we were seeing in our home. And I wanted to know what your thoughts would be on that. And the next thing was...
Let's do one at a time. Hold on. One at a time, okay?
Sorry.
in terms of shielding, you probably got that set up so that it's grounded out.
Yeah, it was grounded. It was also at an angle. We connected it from the roof of our house to the fence.
Yeah.
And we had it all the way around our house.
Well, I don't know what specifically that might, you know, electric fields, electromagnetic fields would go to ground on something like this.
Okay.
Beyond that, I mean, if you've noticed a perceptible change, that's interesting. It would have been good to get some pre-measurements and then some post-measurements to see what actually was happening.
We did that in terms of the temperature.
Okay.
Like, we saw a 15 to 25 degree temperature between our house and the outside reported temperature. And then when we put up the shielding around our house, it went down and matched the outside reported temperature.
Well, your energy transfer through the metal is pretty efficient comparably. I mean, if you go to a metal door versus a wooden door and put your hand on it, you'll see the difference in the temperature transfer between the substance that it's composed of.
Okay.
So that would could easily explain that. The thing I would look for is, you know, with a trimeter or a meter, looking at electromagnetic fields within the residence before and after and see if there was a perceptible change, because that's something you could see on a meter pretty readily.
Okay. And, we do have a tri-field meter, and we've measured an intermittent 3 milligauss reading around our house and inside of our house.
Okay. You know, and that could be for, you know, from a number of sources. And this becomes difficult. And this is, again, why, you know, we're not really in the business of sorting it out, because you'd have to bring in look at the whole spectrum and look at how you can pulse a signal or carry a signal. And then you go, man, the possibilities become enormous and almost endless. So mitigating against each one becomes difficult. And, you know, what you've done in equalizing your house and your outside temperatures has apparently had a beneficial health effect. I couldn't explain that without a whole lot more information. But, you know, the transfer of energy through metal versus other substances is just much more efficient.
Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Nick Begich on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Hello.
Boy, I tell you, with all this onslaught to our brains, we should take care of our brains as well as possible.
We're lucky we still have brains.
You know,
I have a comment about brain cells and then a related question for Nick. I've been doing a lot of research into what we can do to perhaps increase the ability to grow new brain cells because of the aluminum and barium from the chemtrails getting in the brain, and lack of sleep and stress, we're all losing brain cells quicker than we should. And the general idea is that we're pretty much born with the brain cells we're going to have, and the parts of the brain where you can grow new brain cells, they don't migrate to parts of the brain where you lose them and need them. And I was wondering, Nick, in your travels, have you come across anything that increases the chances for neurogenesis, which is the increase in growing new brain cells?
Yeah, actually, I have. The Salk Institute in Southern California has done some work in that area, and we published in Earth Rising and Earth Rising 2, I think both we may have mentioned their work, because they had actually developed a way to grow neurons, which was even the more difficult. And to be able to grow brain cells artificially, in fact, even on electronic substrates. So you could actually grow brain tissue on electronic substrates, so you could actually integrate it into machines.
Well, I mean, for our purposes, human beings.
Well, that's the same, you know, you think about it as in the same way artificial limbs are created to, you know, augment someone's loss. The same can be true with this type of technology, which is the interests of that particular institute's research, is to try and figure out a way to repair the brain, basically to develop techniques to repair brain damage. You know, and the brain's a pretty versatile, you know, organ in terms of being able to work around problems. And this is where things like brain biofeedback come into play. There's other methods for sort of rerouting the way the brain operates a little bit, at least within certain margins, to solve some of the problems that might be created by stroke or by other, you know, other injuries. But, you know, brain research as a subject area is huge. The idea of being able to grow brain cells was something that was demonstrated experimentally, I believe, around 1999 or 2000 in laboratory environments. And the Salk Institute, I believe, was central in that.
You know, the work that everybody has been doing on this technology seems to be pretty dramatic. But is there any other nation ahead of us in this kind of endeavor?
Well, I think if you go back to the early work, the theoretical models that were developed in the former Soviet Union, I think were way ahead of what we were doing, at least as it appears in the open literature. Even the understanding of electromagnetic fields effects on the human body, you know, back at the end of the Cold War, the Soviets had a 1,000 times higher a threshold for human exposures, or I should say lower threshold for human exposures to electromagnetic fields, because they recognize that even small amounts of energy can be quite profound when they interact with the human body. And it's not a matter of everything affecting us. I mean, if you think about all the energy around us today, it's tremendous. It's not the volume, it's the directed energy for a specific effect, and it has more to do with frequency. And if you think about this analogy, and I've used it, I think, before on the program, is a radio station. In between the stations, you get only static. And yet when you get resonance, harmony between the transmitter and receiver, then you get a nice clear signal and everyone hears our voice like they are tonight. The same is true in the human body with every cell, every chemical, every organ, the entire body itself are all can be influenced by external fields of the right frequency and wavelength. And what you see in the development of these technologies is the greater understanding. As we gain understanding of how these energy fields interact with our physiology, that's where the exploitation for new weapons and the development of new health technologies becomes possible. And the unfortunate part of the health technology side of the equation, that's not part of the military mission, except for dealing with mitigating technologies, things that can solve the problem if it's directed at us.
Let's go to our international line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Patagonia.
Ah, Paraguay, huh?
Indeed.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
What interests me the most was a connection between technology and Godship. And I had the Bible hammered into my mind as a child, and I'll never forget it. And it's really cool because I had a structure to judge everything from, and I'm at peace with that. One of the things that came to mind was a couple of times when the nation of Israel was doing battle, God put derision into the minds of the enemy so that they were so confused they began to slay each other. And that brought back a lot of other thoughts about technology, like if a spaceship landed in 607 BCE, they would call it a god. But then again, if Apache helicopter landed in 607 BCE in Israel, they would call it a god also. The idea of our technology putting us in a godship place where we can control at will other people's minds, and then the precedent that's been set up in the Bible, all seem to kind of make sense to me a little bit.
Well, I think you're right on with that.
Absolutely.
And I think, Nick, there could have been some kind of tremendous technology years
Absolutely.
Ago.
Absolutely. I believe that, you know, the creation is created under universal laws and rules, and however you look at what God is, that's the discovery for human beings is figuring out what those rules and laws are. And that's the creative capacity of human beings. And our creative capacity is limitless, in my view. And I think that's where the challenge and the precaution lies. Free will is a powerful thing. We need to exercise it wisely.
Back with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, get ready for this one. Our guest will be Marshall Clairfeld. Adam the Missing Link, that's his story. He tells of mankind's creation by an extraordinary species that occupied planet Earth 450,000 years ago. It will blow the lid off a closely held package of historical and scientific facts proving that the human race was created by genetic engineering technology nearly a quarter of a million years ago. And welcome back. Final segment with Nick Begich. Nick, by the way, the two DVD series, how do people find it, get it?
Oh, for sure. We have a toll-free number I can give you. It's 888-690-1277. Again, that's 888-690-1277. And we've got a special on both of those DVDs. They're an hour and a half video segments. They have complimentary CD-ROMs with them with a lot of the documents we've been talking about tonight. And both of them, freight paid in the U.S., is $35. So it's a really excellent buy.
For the package.
That's right, for both DVDs and both CD-ROMs.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones. First-time caller line, you're up. Hi there.
George, hi. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Good. I had just a quick question for you. I was just wondering, you say that there needs to be regulations with as far as these weapons go and everything, the mind control. What's going to stop other countries, you know, even our country, from going ahead and doing it anyway?
Well, I think that, you know, again, our government is well known for doing its own thing, whether we like it or not. I think that if you set up a regulatory environment, only you do it a little bit differently. You know, in the past, and generally we indemnifies public employees from their actions when they act on behalf of the government. I don't think we should do that in this case. I think we should make people fully culpable for what they do. When you do that, people are much less willing to say yes, and I think that's the first step in the right direction. There are a lot of very brilliant, principled people working in programs that are compartmentalized, not really having full knowledge of what their programs do. When those very brilliant people gain full knowledge and it conflicts with their value systems, many of them will move on to other projects and have plenty of options in life. And I think a good discussion, an open discussion, might breed a little bit more of that, where the very good scientists that are doing the work can put it towards more beneficial uses. The other area where I think our government should be very involved is in mitigation technologies, technologies that avoid the problem, so that our electronic equipment does have the proper safeguards to screen out these signals that they are very well aware of, that radio broadcasts are protected, and that violations are severely punished and by long and arduous jail terms. And that is the solution. And you create whistleblower mechanisms to hold people accountable. And I think those mechanisms are needed not just in this area, but many of the areas covered on Coast to Coast AM are controversial areas where full disclosure and at least a little more disclosure is certainly in order. And I think most of us would agree the American public is more prepared for the truth than we've been inundated by the lies.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Appreciate that. And the lies will catch up with everybody eventually.
Eventually it does. You know, and you know, with all of this, you know, when I look at technology and you know, people have asked me on these subjects, you know, don't you get a little nervous? Don't you get afraid? And, you know, and the answer is no, I don't. You know, my wife, who's here with me this evening, would tell you, you know, I've never in all of this work experienced fear as a function of my work life, because I really believe that when you do what you're supposed to be doing in life, things tend to work pretty smoothly. And even with the rough spots, a lot's gained by that. And I think these issues are the big issues of the 21st century. Coast to Coast is one of the few shows that deals with technology as a fundamental area of its work. And as a consequence, more and more people become aware. Things can change. You know, you'd be amazed. Tom Spencer of the European Parliament heard about HAARP from someone that heard us on this show, on the Coast to Coast program, back when Art was doing it, mm-hmm. back in 95. That individual got our book, read it, marked it all up, sent it to a friend of his who at the time was chairing the Foreign Affairs Committee at that time. He was chairing the Environmental Subcommittee. That was Tom Spencer, and he eventually became chairman of Foreign Affairs and was able to get a resolution passed and some movement headed towards a more positive direction. So I think there's a lot to be said for what every listener hearing this broadcast has the potential of doing is making a change that will profoundly affect the world. And it may be a very, very small thing by their own measure, but there are no small things. My experience tells me that when people act on what they believe to be right and true, amazing things happen, things that are unexpected happen. And that's what we need to be more about, and less about the fear and the worry, and more about doing what we can do within our own individual power about the issues that are important to us, whether it's these issues or others.
Nick, since you brought up HAARP, do you think that has anything to do with this mind control technology?
I think with HAARP at this point, you know, we the program manager, John Heckscher, was confronted with that during a video segment, again, by CBC-TV in Canada. And he basically referred to it as a side effect of the technology, something they weren't interested in. From my perspective, because, again, it's a compartmentalized program, it's now shifted over to DARPA from the Navy and the Air Force. You know, DARPA deals with these kinds of programs, and now is when I would expect to see that kind of experimentation take place. I don't think it was ever designed as a primarily as a mind control technology. It was designed as a weapon system for a lot of other applications, but as a spinoff, it's a pretty compelling one, and one that has been forecasted since 1969 by the Brzezinskis and J.F. Gordon McDonald at UCLA and many others as being possible. The possibility is there. Will this administration or the next administration use it for this purpose? That's a good question, and one that I would not be surprised to see the answer, yes, they would, if they felt that it would serve their purposes. I mean, what we've already seen, preemptive warfare, what does that mean? You know, in the advent of speed of light weapons, that's a scary concept if the Chinese happen to be the ones to develop the most powerful weapons first and use that principle of war and apply it against us.
Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick. Hi, everyone else.
Sure.
I have a question about a more benevolent kind of technology, but I think Nick will be knowledgeable about this. I heard mentioned on a documentary, I think on Nova something, and I'm wondering if you could enlighten us where we could find out more about this or explain it more on the spot. And this has to do with the system of multiplying and representing numerals used in Athabascan culture, which enables people to multiply very large numbers very easily and very quickly.
Well, it's interesting. I'm adopted Athabascan, and I don't know about this numbering system. And
could
I work
find
with,
out for us for next time you're on the program?
I'll make some inquiries with some of our elders. I work with Chicoloon Village, which is a traditional tribal government in Alaska. I was their tribal administrator for a number of years, and I currently work a little bit as their planner on a part-time basis for them. And so I'll talk to my clan grandmother and ask her, and I'm sure, in fact, she often listens to the program. Maybe she's even hearing us tonight. So I'll ask her about this, and we'll make the inquiry. And next time I'm on, I hope to have an answer for you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Mate.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Next up, our next wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Joan from San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah,
and
hi.
I heard a speaker at the Parkinson's Institute conference who said he had done research through NIH funding on controlling trembling, shaking, lack of muscle control, gait, swallowing problems associated with Parkinson's disease through electromagnetic methods of, remote electromagnetic methods of control. And I was at this Parkinson's Institute conference hearing this. I thought, well, you know, that could also apply to perhaps arrhythmia of the heart or epilepsy or paralysis,
right.
Seizures,
right.
Maybe asthmatic breathing problems, even bone growth and osteoporosis, intestinal problems like constipation or whatever. And I was wondering, is there a good source of information on published research? Because apparently it's
yes.
not being published for some reason to a large extent. And I wondered why it's not being published. Why is it being done unpublished?
Well, there's a couple things. The one document I referenced in the very first segment tonight was the Radio Frequency Dosimetry Handbook, which is produced by actually the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, I believe. And it was 1985 is the year. And that's a public record, or it was until, you know, I'm sure it still is. And it was available to us on interlibrary loan, and then we eventually got a copy. And it lays out some of that. If you look up if you just look into electromagnetic field effects, you'll find lots of literature, you know, if you really dig into that subject. And this is very controversial in the medical sciences, and kind of the split between the mathematics and the physicists and the experimental physicists and the bioscientists sort of split in colleges where people had really high math skills. They went into the physics. The things that underlie chemical reactions, the people that had lesser math skills but really good chemistry skills tend to go in life sciences. The idea of energy being a principal player in either causing or affecting health conditions is not something that's readily accepted by most medical practitioners in the West. It is in the East. just because of the nature of their sciences and the development of their science.
But not just energy like yoga or something, but actually instead of putting, say, implanting a pacemaker in the heart, you could use something external, like a little tiny radio, like you have, or something carried in your pocket, and just turn it on, and that would calm your heart or whatever.
Right.
If you were putting it back
in rhythm. Yep. Or disrupting the rhythm, which is what the military has been working on, is how to create heart attacks in people.
Maybe that's causing, but this is for healing, so maybe that's why you don't see some of it. Maybe
that's exactly it.
Would mean the person wouldn't have to have drugs.
Right.
And so this Parkinson's Institute work would be very interesting if you could control the symptoms of Parkinson's without having to implant things actually in the brain.
And this is where we think the biggest betrayal of the public trust is, because when the military develops technologies understanding these underlying principles and then withholds them under national security for weapons applications, we have a strong objection to that, because we believe the higher value of that knowledge isn't in figuring out how to kill people more efficiently, but how to solve people's health issues, particularly, where it's American tax dollars being spent for that, for the development of that knowledge. And I think what you see is the independent institutes that are developing the knowledge in these areas are doing it with a fraction of the funding. And none of the fundamental foundational research has been developed for military applications. And this is, again, a huge betrayal of public trust from my perspective.
East of the Rockies, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm in Grand Prairie, Texas, and I've heard of these things. I've seen them on the Internet. They're called the Gwyn Towers and Ground Wave Emergency Network. And I've read that those are used in conjunction with chemtrails to manipulate weather and for mind control.
Yeah, I really couldn't. I know the Gwen system exists, and I'm familiar with it going back to the very beginnings of when we did our first research on HARP. And people have tried to bring correlations or connections between the two. The unfortunate thing is, I've never seen the documents to support those connections. And George will tell you, I'm a document kind of guy. If you've got it in the paper form where I can see that the sources are good and solid, where I'm willing to go public with them. And this is a big responsibility. When you take these issues public, I believe it's not just informing folks, but you're hoping people act on the knowledge in responsible ways. And that requires a lot of responsibility on the researcher's side. So I'm not so quick to just jump into the middle of the latest controversy unless there's really good supportive evidence. And on that particular tie-in, I have not seen the evidence, although it may be out there. I just haven't seen it.
Okay, well, out here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Yeah.
I've noticed the chemtrails for about 3 years now, and I talked to George a couple months ago. They called me the chemtrail poet.
Okay.
And I'd like to give you another one, George, if I could. But anyhow, since the chemtrails started, they've built a lot of, it looks like, transmission towers with these big round white drums on them, and somebody told me that those were used for microwave transmission.
They are. We have them. We have probably one of the most modern microwave communication systems in the world in Alaska, just because of the remoteness of the place, and we have them everywhere. We have since the late 60s when they put in the first ones.
Okay, well, Dallas-Fort Worth isn't really remote, but, I mean, they're everywhere, and then there's cell phone towers where you'll see clusters of them. They'll be, 15 poles within a couple blocks of each other, and a lot of times you could hear these high-frequency tones through the air, and not everybody hears them. I hear them, my daughter hears them, a couple friends hear them, and real high-pitched, so the dogs hear them. They start barking.
Okay, that's not unusual, actually. There was a study done by the University of New Mexico, and it was insisted upon by a New Mexico U.S. representative who was researching what was called then the Taos hum, and still is referred as that. And the thing is, it doesn't just occur in New Mexico. It occurs all over the world. And if you go back to the invention of radio, there was a small segment of the people that said, hey, the thing is driving me crazy, when they turned on the first radios back in Europe in the turn of the last century. There are some individuals, it appears, by the research, that 1-3% of the population are sensitive to electromagnetic fields and perceive that some of these signals as actual sound. And the reason they know that they're man-made is they're coherent or rhythmic. They're not the kind of sounds or signals that nature generally makes. So, there is something going on there. With the cell towers, There's some great work that has been done in Europe on the subject. We have a great article on our website on cell phones and cell phone towers is sort of the other half of it. And there are serious issues there. George Carlo, who did the work for the industry, actually, $25 million study on cell phones, published a book by the same name, Cell Phones, that talks all about the problems that he uncovered and the cautions that he tried to make to the industry that they ignored him completely.
Well, they weren't too happy with his results.
No, not at all happy. And you know, he is one of my heroes. Here's a guy, I've never met him, but I can tell you, anyone that can take and do a $25 million study and get done and go back to the industry that paid for that study and say, sorry, guys, it's not like you hoped it would be, that's my kind of guy.
Yeah, that's guts.
First, that takes a lot.
First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yep.
Hi. Art, I love your show. This is Teresa from Riverside, Iowa.
That's okay, but I'm not Art, but that's fine. I'll relay the message.
I'm sorry, George. I'm sorry about that. Well, I'm from Riverside, Iowa, and coincidentally, this is the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk. I was wondering if your guest tonight had any information on David Icke or the Silva Ultramind system, which I am intrigued and also frightened by. I wondered what his take on was either one of those.
Well, Nick, you're, of course, aware of our guest, David Icke.
Yeah, I've lectured in forums where David's been there, and you know, I'm familiar with some of his work. You know, he brings up a lot of interesting issues. Some of it, you know, again, I'm a paper kind of guy, so, you know, David doesn't always produce the documents as much as a lot of testimony from people and things like that. On the Silva mind control is another just technique. I mean, there's many, many techniques for controlling mental activity. You know, some of them are cultic, you know, in terms of their development. They're developed to control and manipulate. And remember this little analogy. And again, I wish they had this book back out because it's from the 80s, was The Mind, the Manipulator, which really draws distinctions between things that are that enhance who you are as an individual and things that take from you. And I think a lot of these cultic or semi-cultic methods of mind control are really designed to take power, not end power. And I think that's the problem with much of it. And quite frankly, a lot of the concern, because when you get into these issues, you're talking about the, you know, the regulator of what we do and what we are as human beings. And so, you know, caution should be exercised in these areas. And at the same time, I think the rule should always be, if it doesn't enhance human performance by their own free will, we don't do it.
As usual, Nick Begich, thanks for the information, and we'll see you on your next visit to Coast to Coast.
Okay? All right. Always looking forward to it. My best to everybody.
www.earthpulse.com. Well worth going to take a look at Nick Begich's website. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lone Hood, Sean LaDesour, and George Norrie, I'm Art Bell. Oh, no. I'm kidding. And Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Be safe, everyone.